What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Kinda Funny podcast. I'm your host, Nick Scarpino, alongside the second best baby blues in all of San Francisco, Mr. Tim Geddes.
What's up, host? How you doing, Nick?
I am doing very, very well. Very excited about this one. Saw it on the calendar on Monday. Was like, yeah, it's going to be a good one. We're also joined by the Hispanic heartthrob, Texas Street, Latino Heat, clicking heads and ripping them to shreds, the Globetrotter headshot nitro rifle from twitch.tv, Andy Cortez. Andy, how are you?
A little bit of a salad, Nick. A little bit of some Flamin' Hot Baconettes. Perfect meal. All the food groups.
I'm worried about us. I want to say that. I'm worried about both of our nutritions. I'm not just going to point it at you because beforehand we were talking about how I ate six eggs yesterday. Yeah. And I want to get and our guest today had a special opinion on that. So without further ado, making his triumphant return to Kind of Funny content. You know him from Achievement Hunter. You know him from Rooster Teeth. You know him from that one episode of the Kind of Funny morning show he was on. Please welcome back Jeff Ramsey.
One of the better episodes. Yeah.
It was a great episode.
It's great to be here. First off, thanks for having me back eventually. Mm-hmm. I don't know why we had to have the like 3-year hiatus where you guys forgot my phone number.
Did this happen because I tweeted at you? Is this?
Yeah. No. You tweeted at me. And then I said, waiting for the invite. And now here we are.
That's so funny. I didn't even see that. I just was like, oh, man, we haven't had Jeff on in a while. I just texted him out of the blue a couple nights ago, and here he is.
Jeff said, hey, I'm on Cameo now. If you would like to purchase a Cameo from me, this is what I'm doing. You can go to this link. You can find me on Cameo. And I said, can we do a customized Cameo where it's about 90 minutes long, maybe less, and it's five dudes just talking about stuff, about life or whatever. And he said, I could be convinced. So, and here you are. It's about $8,000 right now.
Wow. Okay. Now, am I paying that or are we taking that out of, Kevin,
out of you.
Kevin's tech budget?
Straight from Kev, for sure.
It's me. Now, Jeff, before we started, we were talking about coffee making. And Kevin was going on about this French press that you guys were doing. And then you said something that really resonated with me, as you often do, by the way. Welcome back to the content. It's good to see you.
Thank you.
You said French press, you were doing that for a while. It just got to be too much. It's a lot.
Yeah.
So you've turned back to the old school pot of coffee. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Now I want you to know that one Greg Miller and one Nick Scarpino have also done that. And I don't know if it's because Greg's approaching 40. I have turned the corner on 40 or not, but I just get to the point where I'm like, these pods, these French presses, these espressos, this is for the birds. Give me a good old fashioned pot of coffee. Maybe it's a little cold. Maybe a cigarette on the side. You know what I mean, Andy? Let's go after this thing.
What is that? What's for the birds? Where does that come from?
It's for the birds.
It's all a bunch of newfangled nonsense.
Exactly.
Just plain coffee's good. Just simple, honest to God, as God made it, coffee. It was intended to be drink. Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm looking up the origins of for the birds.
In my opinion, it means like it's flighty. It's a thing that comes and goes. You know, you can't nail it down. Yeah. It's not consistent.
The phrase is of American origin, while still in use there, has never been commonly used elsewhere. It's a U.S. Army slang and originated towards the end of World War II. An early example of its use is
when he starts saying this, I'm like, oh, man, is this going to be bad? Is this going to be a term I've been using for a while that's going to be terrible?
It doesn't seem like it.
Birds are canceled.
Yeah,
shit. Don't take too seriously this belief that we have football at Camp Ellis solely for the entertainment of the personnel. That's strictly for the birds. The Army is a winner. The Army likes to win. That's the most fortunate thing in the world for America. That's cool. I like that.
I don't know that I understand what you just said, but it really resonated
with me. Only the birds can see that. Only the birds are getting entertained by that thing.
It felt like propaganda, though, right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
But Kevin, what are you eating?
Yeah.
Propaganda.
We got halfway through the propaganda, and the words started sticking to your...
Garlic rice with pork chops and eggs.
It's lovely.
Fucking really good.
Garlic rice, pork chops, eggs.
Sounds lovely.
Sometimes we just need like a TikTok.
$7.50. My God, it was amazing. It's just best bang for your buck.
What's the origin? We're getting into etymology. What's the etymology of best bang for your buck?
Oh, that's a good question.
I'm on it.
I have to imagine.
Prostitution.
It's prostitution. Yeah.
That would be my guess. One would assume.
Right.
But it's probably far more mundane.
Oh, no. You guys are wrong. You guys are wrong.
Andy's our resident entomologist.
You guys are wrong, everybody. The phrase originated from the slang usage of the words bang, which means excitement, and buck, which means money. Variations of the term include bang for your buck or bang for one's buck, blah, blah, blah. The phrase bigger bang for the buck was notably used by U.S. President Dwight D. Eisenhower's Secretary of Defense, Charles Irwin Wilson, who used it to describe the new look policy of depending on nuclear weapons rather than a large. Yeah, it's fucking boring. Yeah, who cares?
You know, and you can do that again, but that can you sounds like a cover story.
Yeah.
About
Dwight Eisenhower. And
yeah. Yeah, that'd be more fun.
Oh, actually, it says criticism. You know, like when you look at Wikipedia and you never want to have a section on you that says like controversy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So here it says criticism for this phrase, bang for the buck. And it says the word bang is slang for sexual intercourse. Hence, the phrase bang for the buck has the slang, also has the slang meaning of sexual intercourse for money. So you guys were right, kind of.
Well, I mean, that's what it's been probably, you know.
Changed to
over the years of the interpretation of it. Obviously, we all thought that. But I've always used that term as far as, like, getting the most out of your dollar. I never really thought about it as far as sex is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Tim down there. Look at him. Wetting his chops. Thinking about Wikipedia controversies.
You guys talk about all this coffee stuff. I only have the Keurig pod thing, and I'm actually out of pods right now. It's been so hot in San Francisco recently that I haven't had any needs for it. I'm just a pure iced coffee man. Today is freezing cold. It rained yesterday for the first time in a while, cool. Which is great for the drought and all that stuff. But I made myself a little tea. And I got to let y'all know, I don't know why I haven't been drinking tea forever. Maybe just because it's always hot here. But this shit's good.
It's also just good. American.
Yeah.
Tea. Yeah. I feel like every time I've ever had hot tea in my life, I thought, I wish this was a little better.
Me too.
You know what
I mean? It's very
Ted Lasso. It's okay. But it's not.
It's okay.
It's not coffee.
I think about tea in the context of two different situations for me. One is that I'm not feeling well and somebody offers to make me a cup of tea. And I'm like, you know what? That does sound nice. So it's kind of in my brain. It makes me think of being on the couch with a bunch of blankets. And then I get to watch whatever my comfort food movie is. Spoilers, it's usually Big Trouble in Little China. Or I'm abroad. I'm jet lagged. And I go, can I get a cup of coffee? And they go, do you mean espresso? And I go, no, I mean coffee. And they go, oh, sir, we don't have that here. All we have is tea, governor. And I'm like, oh, mother fuck, right? So that's why I don't drink a lot of tea, because Tim, we haven't exported drip coffee to the rest of the world.
Tim, you weren't here for the legendary, one of the kind of funny podcasts that will go down as history as one of the most entertaining podcasts. You weren't here for that one. It's the episode where we talked.
Was I here for that one?
It's the episode where we talked about and ranked berries, because I told the story how I was at the supermarket and I reached for the blueberries and an old lady next to me said, that's the best berry. And I kind of looked at her. I was like, I don't disagree, but what if I did? Would I challenge you on it? You know, but on that episode, we also talked about tea and how I wish that I was a tea drinker, because Sir Patrick Stewart looks so young because of all the Earl Grey tea he drinks. That's what everybody says. I don't know if that's true or not. I'd like scientists to look it up. But apparently he looks so, you know how Patrick Stewart has looked 70 years old for the last 50 years?
Yes.
And I feel like I think a lot of that is because of the Earl Grey tea and its sort of healing properties.
I don't think we should. I don't know that we should go out there and be saying that, but I will back that 100%, Andy.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Andy, real quick, before we leave this topic, do you know that Patrick Stewart, huge Beavis and Butthead fan, has a giant collection of memorabilia? I just wanted to throw that out there. No, I swear to you, it's true. Google it.
Here's the thing about Patrick Stewart that I think we can all agree. We love Patrick Stewart, right? He is he's a down-ass mother effer. But this makes me love him even more. This makes me love him even more because, as you guys know, Beavis and Butthead Do America, I hold in very high regard, Tim Geddes.
I think I'm not surprised, Nick Scarpino. Let me tell you that.
That movie is great.
You know what? This makes a lot of sense to me because for a while, I would always think to myself, Patrick Stewart is like too high brow to be a voice on American Dad. I always thought
he did Family Guy also.
Yeah, he does a lot of Family Guy as well. Like I just thought, like, why is Patrick Stewart kind of agreeing to do this? It's just kind of, it's weird. It's cool, feels out of character. But if he loves Beavis and Butthead, I feel like, oh, he just kind of likes raunchy, stupid cartoons. I wonder if he's a fan of King of the Hill also.
I'm sure he is. I remember watching the documentary that they did about The Next Generation, and it kind of changed my opinion. Not that I had a bad opinion of Patrick Stewart. I've always loved him because I love Picard, and I actually liked him as Professor X, unlike Tim. But I'm just throwing shade because you're not talking right now. It makes me nervous.
Yeah, I'm not talking because you're talking. That's how podcasts work.
Is that how it works? I thought we invited our friends that we haven't seen in 3 years and then we don't let them talk at all or ask them any questions.
Well, Jeff seemed very conflicted by the idea that Patrick Stewart, you know, I'm like, yeah, he shouldn't be long on that cartoon. Why would he agree to that? Jeff seemed like you wanted to disagree. So
he seems very self-aware of his own fame and to have such a good sense of humor about it. Like, do you remember that episode of Extras he was in? That was many years
ago.
Genius.
You're right.
I feel like it's kind of right up his sensibilities just based on what I know of the man from seeing him appear to the thing.
That's what I was going to say. He seemed, when I watched that documentary about him, about how the Next Generation came about and how it was like a shoestring budget, he just seemed very down to earth, where he was like, my career was not going anywhere. This was like the last kind of ditch effort for me, and it ended up working out for him and obviously catapulting him into like movie stardom and being the person he is today. But he just seems like a lot more grounded than I think he comes off, just because he's got that nice proper English accent that just makes him sound better than everyone. But maybe that's us judging him. Maybe that's not him judging us.
No, the accent goes a long way. We have this British kid named Gavin that works with us, and if you ever have a conversation with him, he's one of the dumber people you'll meet, but the accent fools you. It just hits you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unlike Greg, Greg's got that Midwest accent that you're just like, you're dumb as a pile of rocks.
Does he?
I don't know.
He doesn't have that. Just wanted to dig at him. Yeah.
Well, I just feel bad. He hasn't been on the podcast in 3 weeks and I miss him. And I'm sorry that he couldn't be there.
I love the idea that Nick isn't entirely sure if he has the accent or not.
The Chicago. Well, actually, you know what's funny is I backed away from that for a second because I was like, is Chicago considered Midwest? I don't really understand what Midwest is. Truth be true. I think it is. No, but also sometimes this is how I show love for Greg, is I insult him and then people clip that out and they send it to him and he goes, oh, Nick was thinking about me on the podcast. And it's true.
Obviously, I feel Greg bad. Let me talk shit about him.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
Inaccurate shit.
Greg doesn't process emotions like other human beings process them. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I think he receives an insult from me as like a warm hug, you know, like a warm little koala bear hug. Ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't know, this is the Kind of Funny podcast where each and every week, three, sometimes four best friends gather around these podcast mics to shoot the breeze and talk about coffee. If you want to support this show, you can do so in a lot of different ways. One of which is subscribe to our channel or subscribe to our feeds for podcasts. We really like that. We like seeing those numbers go up. And also, if you got a few bucks to give, head over to patreon.com/kindoffunny and throw us some over there. You can get all sorts of cool stuff like this show ad-free. You can be a part of our exclusive Patreon-only post-show that Jeff's hopefully going to stick around for. And you can ask him some questions while you're there.
Shout out to our Patreon producers. He
just realized he doesn't have time right now. He's like, I have 15 more minutes on this podcast talking about French press, and then I'm out. Shout out to our Patreon producers, Pranksky, Delaney Twinning, and Julian the Gluten Free Gamer, and Pranksky, number two. We love you very much. Today's podcast is brought to you by MeUndies, HelloFresh, and Uncommon Goods. We'll talk about those a little bit later. Now back to breakfast talk.
So,
real quick with the breakfast talk, go for it, Jeff.
I was going to say, I think it's context, right? Like, six scrambled eggs doesn't seem inordinate to me. It just seems like a hungry guy. Six boiled eggs feels like a statement.
That's weird.
Boiled eggs are weird. A good point. Although six
but
scrambled eggs.
It's the same
eggs.
Amount of egg. It's all about how you
come on, guys, come on. Boiled eggs go down quick.
Well, what's the difference? You can eat six hard-boiled eggs right now.
Nick, I assure you, I get absolutely insane.
You are going to – this
do
is a challenge.
No, it's not a challenge. If I were to eat a number of boiled eggs, it'd probably be three.
I'm gonna Postmates over from Starbucks those little packets that have the two hard-boiled eggs in them. I'm gonna get you three of those packets. I want to see how many of those hard-boiled eggs you can shoot down.
Don't be ridiculous.
Before you start
That's
to regurgitate them up.
That's not a challenge.
You think you could eat six, right? I think I would start to throw up around four.
No, I think I could eat six, and I just had lunch. I just finished lunch.
Wow.
This is how cool hands started.
What'd you say?
I said, this is how Cool Hand Luke started. You got to be careful.
Yeah, it's true. With hard-boiled eggs, the hard-boiled egg
Kevin's going to end up escaping from jail and getting caught, and then they're going to beat him into submission, and we're all going to turn our backs on him.
You know, I don't think you can beat Kevin into submission. Me and Tim have been trying to do that for the last 7 years, and he just keeps getting more powerful somehow.
I want to see Kevin unhinge his jaw like a boa constrictor and take down these eggs, like, all at once. Damn. I really just want to see it down him, dude. I believe in you.
So I had the three eggs. I made the six eggs scrambled, thinking I'll eat three now and then three tomorrow. And then, of course, 10 o'clock comes around. I throw on some Netflix, and I think to myself, what would be good, Tim, the rest of these eggs today?
Yes,
with maybe – they're ice cold with maybe a little bit of mayo on top of them.
Wait, so you scramble your eggs and then you throw them in the fridge?
That sounds so terrible, dude.
I really do.
What is wrong with you?
I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know why this is appealing to me. And actually, last night as I ate them, I was thinking to myself, you should stop. You're starting to feel sick. And then I went to this. I went to the cabinet and I got these little pills that I have called nauseam pills that make your stomach feel better so I could eat them a little bit more.
You're right. We're right back. We are right back.
Wait, he's got Jeff. Vomit pills, anti-vomit pills that he eats when he's eating too much so that he can keep eating.
I'm like an old Roman lord, you know what I mean? Where you're just there and I'm like, where? Bring me my vomit bucket so I can vomit them out so I can eat more.
God. Jeff, we are 1 week removed from talking about the time that Kevin and Tim kept telling Nick, hey, if you're feeling sick, you should stop eating. And Nick was kind of getting mad at them because he kept eating Parmesan cheese, right? Yeah. Or hold on like that.
Yeah, you got to give him context of the thing.
We were at Dave and Buster's for lunch, which, like, Jeff, I am sure you know. As a content creator, there's always those days where you're shooting some shows, you're doing some gameplay, all that stuff. And then it's lunchtime. And then there's always the one jackal that's like, let's do something crazy for lunch. Who's down to go somewhere weird? And then you end up at Dave and Buster's and you're sitting there and Nick insists on ordering way too many appetizers.
I don't
which
like
is
being called a jackal.
Nice. You know, of course, we get to partake in some of it, but then he always gets one thing too much that's weird. And this time was an insane amount of cheese.
It was a salad that came with a Parmesan crisp on the side of it. But the Parmesan crisp looked like...
It was the size of a plate.
It was the size of a plate. Yeah. And I started eating it. And I don't think it was that the crisp was bad.
Captain America's shield.
Dude, it's just cheese. That there was so much of it. It was just too much cheese.
But Nick, that's what we kept telling you. We kept being like, hey, Nick, that's too much cheese. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you did the thing, you know, where the like scared squirrel thing where you like, we're eating the cheese, looked up at us, went, and then looked away.
Yeah. And I started eating and I finished it.
Where's the impetus to continue? Were you raised to finish your plate?
Yes. I was a consummate overeater growing up. So growing up in my Italian household, we got to dial this back. If we want to have the therapy session right now, you got to dial it back. Elena Scarpino grew up with a very, very old mother. Her mother was like very, like kind of depression era. So everything was like, you don't waste food growing up, right?
Right.
If there's food on your plate, you have to eat the plate, otherwise it's disrespectful for everyone out there that can't have that much food, which we always grew up having. That, coupled with my mother not understanding how to scale recipes to the people that were there. So we had a family of four growing up, but she only ever knew how to make stuff that was like for eight people. So it was always like, there's a lot of food on this table. You're not getting up until you finish it. It was that. And then, of course, obviously dialing it back more, it's like that is how I'm an overeater. That's just how it goes. I've been an overeater forever. It's something I've struggled with. So coming out of that, realizing that when I'm, you know, I should be going to bed at midnight instead of starting another episode of Seinfeld or whatever and eating, I start to unpack that and go, oh, maybe I'm just a little anxious about tomorrow. I'll have to take a step back, have a glass of water, like just go to bed. That'll make everything a little bit better. Also, eating's fun.
So there's that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's true.
I have a question for you all who seem more adult-like than me, even though I'm 2 years older than Tim.
Are you really?
Yeah. Maybe three?
Oh, it still shocks people.
That's weird. I would have thought you were Tim's age, maybe a couple years younger than him. Just because you're very spry. You play basketball.
3 years older than me.
I stayed at a hotel over the weekend. Are we tipping people at hotels? I don't know what to do.
That is a big source of anxiety.
Is it Vegas? Is it Vegas? Then no.
It's Andy in Vegas?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, you're supposed to tip Vegas when you get there, and if you got a bunch of like
I don't do it. I don't do
bags
it, Kevin.
And shit, and you give them the bags. It's if they provide a service for you. If you walk in there, you got 15 fucking bags, and they're like, "Sir, allow me to please take the bags." I'm always like, first off, no, sir. I don't got a tip for you. Get out of here. But sometimes Nick will be like, yeah, just give him the bag. And then Nick slips him $5
bill. This is a nice hotel.
A little linky.
The guy had a top hat. I feel like I needed to give him a tip.
Top hat, you got to get. Wait, was this the LA trip you just took?
Yeah.
Jeff, what are your thoughts on this?
Was it an ironic top hat or was it appropriate to the hotel?
Was he pairing that with suspenders?
Did
he do anything to you? For you?
I guess
did he do anything to you?
What did
you call the cops, sir? Like, I think the Top Hat could have been ironic based on the chain of hotel, right? Like if it's a La Quinta Inn, probably an ironic Top Hat. But yeah. It was a Fairmont. It was really, really nice.
Stop. Okay. If you're staying at a La Quinta Inn and someone there has a Top Hat, they don't work at that La Quinta Inn.
They're yeah, don't give them your you bags. Out of your bag. They're yeah. going to take your bags.
This guy believes me. This guy believes me.
Idiot. Then it does street magic and disappears. You're like, fuck, that was actually pretty cool.
This is a very unironic Top Hat, Jeff.
And what did he do for you? Did he open a door or did he carry your bags?
They did grab my one luggage thing because I was kind of blindsided by all of it, honestly. I was kind of caught off guard.
You got to stop them from getting your, if it's just one bag, they'll try to take it and then you do have to pay them, but that's unnecessary. You should just you got to maintain positive control of your bag in that situation and don't travel with 15 bags like Kevin apparently.
I'm the guy that carries all the camera equipment, Jeff. I got stuff.
In that case, you can tip them. But just spot on, right? See, what you got to do is you got to assert your dominance over these bags right when you get out of the cab. And that's that comes with a very quick like,
Hey, whoa,
I got it. You know, you pull that because they're immediately going to open that trunk and start taking your bag out. Once that happens, you have a short period of time to grab that bag back from them and walk your own bag up to the concierge or the front desk. Once the bag's been out of your sight, or out of your, like, what did Jeff call it?
How much time are we talking?
Positive control. You got to maintain positive control.
If it's out of your positive control for 5 minutes, then you've got to tip the guy when he brings it up to your room or brings it back to you.
Real quick, now that we're talking about this topic, I have a gripe with the bathroom people. You know what I mean? You go to a fancy
bathroom
place.
People.
Yeah, sometimes you go to a real fancy place. A lot of times it's in Europe, you know? And they got someone standing there with towels, fucking like candies and shit.
Attendant.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like that shit.
Dude, Kevin.
Like, that's the thing. It's like, I'll give you a dollar to get out so I can do what I need to do.
I got to do my
Because I don't like dealing with audiences, you know?
Yeah. You can hear me and
smelling. I can solve that problem for you, Kevin. Mm-hmm. Don't go to strip clubs. Those men don't exist anywhere else. Yeah, you're not. when was the last time you were in Europe in a fancy bathroom in Europe and somebody did that?
4 years ago.
When I was in a strip club in Europe, that was probably the last time.
Jeff, I'm going to have to fight back on this one because there were bathroom people like we're talking like they're
I know
like it's a secret it's, kind I, of like race of creature. I saw bathroom people at an Overwatch League event. Dude, know your clientele. And that's my problem with the hotel guy that like here's the thing. I never want to be profiled except for when I'm getting out of an Uber and I look like myself and I'm dressed like myself. That's when I want to be profiled. Yes. I want them to look at me and be like, he's not gonna tip. Yeah. And like I would appreciate that, to be honest with you, because like if I'm dressed a certain way, maybe if I'm getting out of an Uber Deluxe or a Lyft first class, I don't know what the fuck they call their thing, but if I'm getting out of those really nice Ubers, then sure, like, you know, maybe you could be like, oh, that's just kind of his hangout gear or whatever. But I also got to assume I probably wasn't alone because I was at that hotel with a lot of other streamers. And there were probably not a whole lot of tips happening over that weekend.
Here's the problem, though. Streamers, not us, but most streamers make a lot of money.
Right?
People that probably got invited to that thing
are used to tips.
It's the problem you run into is that rich people can look just like us, Andy. They can wear schlubby zip-up hoodies that they forgot they were wearing and absolutely meant to take off before the podcast started. And it's just been, a solid 22 minutes and everyone's seen me in this hoodie that I wore a lot. So, but I'm with you, right? If I get out of the podcast or I get out of the Uber and I'm wearing, like, you know, some schlubby Reeboks, I'm hoping I'm exuding, don't ask me for money. Don't give me the awkward encounter where you accompany me to my room. Let me do that because it's not that I don't want to give you money. It's the anxiety of I didn't think of this beforehand and I don't have any cash on me.
Well, that's the beauty of the strip club, right?
The thing?
That's why that makes sense. It's like they know you have the cash on you. Like they're targeting you even more to try to like shake you down as much as possible. But like it's the places that they don't make sense. At a nice hotel, it's like, all right, I kind of get it. At some of the fancier like dance clubs or whatever, that makes sense. But about a decade ago, the first time I ever came across one of these bathroom people was in a San Francisco mall downtown. And it's like, that is a very inappropriate place. Like the people that are at this mall are not walking around with cash. They are not looking to tip bathroom people. Like it makes no sense at all. And they were there for years. until eventually, I don't know, maybe COVID took them out.
They're probably there to stop people from using heroin, right?
That's actually a really good point, Kevin.
I know it sounds like a joke, but like legitimately, heroin is a huge problem in San Francisco.
No, it just wasn't.
People shooting up on the street, yeah.
I was going to say that they were either there for that or just keep it clean and make sure people weren't like hiding out in there, but that's a really good call.
And why are they trying to get tips then? I'll be
honest with you. And this is no disrespect to hotel workers. You guys work really hard too. But keeping people from doing heroin in a public bathroom sounds like a really hard job. I might tip you if I see you be like, sir, I'm sorry, please don't do heroin here. And you have to deal with that situation. I might be like, here's a couple bucks, bro. Thanks for holding this fucking down so I can go pee at a urinal here and not get stabbed by a needle.
Jesus Christ. That's brutal.
I've seen some horrible shit in the bathrooms at the Westfield Mall down on Market
Street. That's the one I'm talking about.
I've seen some weird shit in those bathrooms. I don't like, there are certain bathrooms there that I just won't go to. I'm like, I don't want to feel cornered over here by this urinal right now and have to fight my way out like it's some sort of Dead by Dawn or some shit like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but yeah.
Dead by Dawn.
What kind of malls do you guys hang out in?
Dude, we're in San Francisco. It's no man's land here right now.
Well, it's also the nicest mall in San Francisco, right?
Oh, the nicest, because they have people to stop you from doing heroin.
No, it's just, I guess if you think about like the shitty malls don't have anyone to stop you. You don't want to go in that bathroom. You're gonna
shitty malls also have ICs. So there is that trade-off where you're like, they do have the good Sbarro.
7-Eleven.
No, Jeff, I don't know if you realize this or not, but the pandemic has amplified a lot of the issues that our fine cities are having right now, one of which is we're having a pretty big drug problem in San Francisco, not the least of which I think is like heroin and fentanyl. Fentanyl is pretty bad, too.
Fentanyl's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been having a similar problem where in Austin, where all of California moved here during the pandemic.
We'd like to actually officially apologize for that.
No, keep them. Those are a bunch of quitters out there.
Keep them. Yeah, there's a bunch of quitters.
A lot of people quitting to Austin right now. Really appreciate it.
Jeff, what's been the sort of, like, what has been your public life in Austin over the pandemic? Like, are you, recently we kind of, we'll go to a movie once every week or two because we got to review it, but also, like, I love getting out of this apartment and going to a movie and hanging out with the dudes. Like, I'm going to go adventure out in this city. Yeah.
That's a great question, Andy, and thanks for asking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, since the pandemic started, at Rooster Teeth, we have been a work-from-home company. We've only started to recently go back and only for specific productions. So I've spent much of the last year in my house avoiding the outside world. But when I do go out, it's very rarely to spend time with other humans, become a pretty big hermit this last year or so. But I ride my bicycle every day. And so I ride 30 miles on my bike every day. Fuck. And it's an e-bike, so it's a little bit easier.
Okay.
I'm still pedaling with the best of them.
Yeah. 30 is still a lot. It's like, I feel like 30 e-bike miles is equal to at least 10 bike miles, right?
Oh, for sure. And it's about 3 hours a day. Anyway, wow. Andy, so I go from where I live all the way down. You know this because you used to live in Austin. I go all the way down to Town Lake, and I go down to Barton Springs, and I go all the way down to the dam, and then all the way back, and then I go through some neighborhoods. And that's my only real exposure to the outside world. I've been to two movies, I believe. Yeah, two movies since the pandemic, and I don't have.
Please tell me Venom 2 was one of them.
Venom 2, one of those movies?
It was a Jason Statham movie where he had to stop a bank robbery. I don't remember what it was called.
This bank robbery.
That was it.
That was
pretty good. Yeah,
and it was obviously Fast and Furious. I saw those are the only two movies I've seen in theater.
Of course.
Oh yeah.
Venom 1, Tim. I don't know if I would appreciate Venom 2.
I'd
be lost in the story.
Oh, we hate it.
Let me tell you, dude, there's a lot of nuance to that story, too, so you really don't want to do yourself that disservice.
Yeah, no, we fucking hate it. I mean, 3 hours is a long time.
Yeah, what are you doing during those? Are you listening to podcasts or music or anything?
Here's what I'm doing. If I'm Jeff, I'm popping on Lord of the Rings: Two Towers. Like, that's a perfect trip. That's a perfect trip, you know?
Usually what I'm doing is listening to music and working out bits for podcasts.
Awesome.
I thought Nick would have reacted to the Lord of the Rings bit, but I guess not.
I'm sorry. I got another random phone call that I was like, oh, I think that might be someone of importance. And of course, it is just spam. It's one of the 500 spam calls that I get every day. I apologize that Lord what of the Rings is for nerds. I digress, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, Jeff, you've been doing a lot of cool stuff over at RT recently that I've been appreciating. I just finished Last Laugh Season 2. I love the kind of higher production value of all of it. I was talking about it on the podcast a couple weeks ago, but I've appreciated something about you the last couple years, okay. Jeff, and that is that you've kind of more publicly expressed your love of reality TV and the different forms of reality TV. And I think that The Last Laugh is kind of an example of you guys trying to do some game showy reality TV stuff at Rooster Teeth. And I appreciate that a lot. I wonder, what's your experience been with all that stuff?
Oh, well, thanks, Tim. It always confuses and humbles and blows me away that you watch Rooster Teeth content still. Really appreciate that. You're right. I'm obsessed with reality TV. I have pretty much, to the frustration of the few people that I guess I still communicate with, I have pretty much sworn off all movies and most narrative-based things for pure reality TV. I'm real into the Welcome. Housewives of Beverly right now. Housewives
Fuck
of Beverly
yeah, Hills. Man.
I'm real into Salt Lake City. God damn, dude. Tonight's going to be part two of the
I
reunion.
Know.
I'm so fucking jazzed. Mm-hmm. That shit, that is TV
that show,
right there. You have never seen drama like what's going
Erica
on this
Jane.
Season. Of
that
Beverly
show
Hills
is like a vortex where I try so hard not to watch that show. I'm the antithesis of both of you. I'm like, I don't know why people enjoy this. I don't know why people want to be around that level of anger and ferocity all the time. And as I'm thinking this, that's what's going up here, right? Meanwhile, my wife's watching it in the next room, and I snap out of my haze, and I've been watching this freaking reunion for 20 minutes already. It is the most fascinating like social experiment ever, is putting all these women in a room together and having them just hack at each other emotionally. It's crazy.
You gotta get into the show if you find that interesting, because all the events that lead up to it, there's so much intrigue and nuance. It's so fantastic. That's just scratching the surface, Tim. I love a lot of reality TV. The Circle. I'm all over the place. I'm like, I watch a lot of stuff. Big fan of Below Deck.
I will say, I'm sorry, let me stop you right there. I don't watch any reality television other than two shows. There's two shows that I look forward to. Well, I watch a lot of car shows too, but I don't count that as reality.
Great British Bake Off.
Great show.
Have to have it. And Below Deck is a secret guilty pleasure of mine.
Hell yeah.
Watching a bunch of good looking people on a super yacht, Tim. Get GTF out of here. Get out of here. Let's go. Let's go to the Mediterranean now.
See, that's my thing. I started with just The Bachelor, and I got hopelessly addicted to that, as everybody knows, over the last couple of years. But then due to the pandemic, Joey eventually was like, yo, you got to just commit. You got to make the jump to Bravo. And she convinced me and Gia to get into Vanderpump Rules. So that's where we started. We went way too hard, watched the entire thing. And then what's the natural progression, Jeff? Of course, you got to go to Beverly Hills. So we've been doing that.
You
got to
find out where Lisa Vanderpump came from.
The origin story. Exactly. Yeah. So we've been doing all that. So we are actually, we are in the final season. We're catching up on the current season now because we just watched all of the seasons leading into this. So I'm still maybe like 2 weeks away from watching the reunions in proper, but very excited stuff for everyone. To answer your own question that I was going to ask in my mind about this, we haven't made it to Below Deck yet, but that is inevitably on the list.
And don't sleep on Mediterranean or the sailing one. Those are both good as well.
I've watched them.
I just watched, I don't know why, but my girlfriend and I just watched 21 straight seasons of Survivor. Back to back.
We're doing that too.
Without anything else in between, like just each night, like 4 hours of Survivor. Yeah. And it was maybe the best decision I've ever made. I learned so much about Survivor in such a short period of time. Derived so much entertainment value from it. But to answer your question that you asked initially, like 100 years ago, Tim, before I just started naming reality shows, I think the desire when we get to a certain point in our lives and certainly to a success level where we have the freedom to do it, maybe, or a little more freedom to do it, you want to create what you're interested in. Right. And I really am into reality TV. I really do love the interplay between people, and I love, you know, it's a, my, my, my favorite form of entertainment of all time would be the Howard Stern Show. And the reason I like that show is because of how well the people are able to get under each other's skin, how well they know each other, how well they can fuck with each other. And I think that's what reality TV does in spades when done well. And so it just, yeah, we also did a show called Camp Betrayal that was also like a spooky game show, similar kind of thing. And we have a lot more planned for next year with it, too. And also, I'm just not much of a narrative guy. I don't write, you know, everything that we do is, or at least on my side of the business, is off the cuff or reality based. You know,
that's interesting. I wouldn't have pegged that, but that does make a lot of sense, right? Because obviously, like,
yeah,
one of the experiences that you and I went through together was Waiting for the Punchline, which was when you guys were doing the RT Docs series. Very much the same thing, and I know you had a very heavy hand in all of those, right? Like, you were the ones that kind of, you were one of the people that helped approve those and get those kind of pushed through budgetarily, mm-hmm. and like production wise. That's fascinating. But I mean, like, you look at that, how do you get from the Real Housewives to what you guys are doing with Last Laugh?
Well, I can't take credit for Last Laugh. That idea was Elise Willems from Funhouse. So I'm doing my job right, you just let other more talented creative people come up with ideas and then you just greenlight them. But I you know, a lot of it is, if you want to get the behind the curtain, it's a lot of it's budgetary, it's schedule based. How long do we have these people? How many cameras do we have? What can we afford to shoot? Can we afford to go on location or not? Okay, it's got to be on location. What can we build in the studio? You know, how long can we expect to get these people to come in from out of town? How long are we going to be able to put them up in hotels? And you just kind of whittle it down, and then you look at like the I don't know, the binder of ideas that you've written down over the last few years. Go ahead, Andy.
Jeff Ramsey.
Yeah.
You are given the unlimited budget, the unlimited resources. What is no constrictions? What is no restrictions? What is the reality show you want to make?
Before you answer that question, ladies and gentlemen, you know you can back us over on patreon.com/kindoffunny. Wow. We love you very, very much. Just like Rocket Guardian did, he asked the question, Jeff, if you had an infinite budget, and what would be the ideal live action show you would produce at Rooster Teeth?
That's my account. Restrictions.
What's that? Is that you?
No.
That's Andy. What, no. You go by Rocket Guardian now, Andy? How many monikers do you have? Also, is there any show you can hint at that is in the pipeline currently?
God, I wish I could give a really cool answer. I would love to work with the Jackass guys at some point. Like, then that'd be like, if I could throw money at Johnny Knoxville and Steve-O and those guys to get them to do some kind of a thing, that would be cool. But I think the real answer is I had a really fortunate couple of about 4 or 5 years there where I was able to basically produce everything I've ever wanted to make. And I did, you know, I guess I wouldn't mind continuing. We did a ghost hunting show, mm-hmm. called Haunter. And we got to go all over the world. We got to go as far as Australia and London or England to hunt ghosts. We did that for 2 years. It would be fun to do it again, but also I've already done it and I'm a little bit older now and tired. And I honestly, I'm doing what I want to do. I do a podcast and I put everything I have into that podcast. And that's really fulfilling. And so I don't have a lot of like bucket list stuff left.
Because I'm saying, like, whatever sort of reality thing you want to do, I love the idea of Below Deck. I want to be in a submarine, like even further below. Oof, that.
Count me out.
Like very, like, below deck.
Yeah, I think it's just a bunch of people. Maybe there's not a whole lot of drama. Maybe just more hanging out, kind of like creating bits on the cuff, you know, off the cuff. But we're in a submarine. Either that or we're in the stratosphere. Kind of like how William Shatner, ooh, was floating up in space earlier and he was like, oh, wow. Did y'all see? It was incredible. It was a great video. did you not know this, Jeff? William Shatner in space?
Oh, yeah. I watched him cry and not be able to talk to Jeff Bezos for about 15 minutes.
Yeah, it was really insane.
Sounds right.
I want to just like do what we like to do and hang out and kind of film. Because one thing that I loved about doing all those spring break reunions we used to do was, mm-hmm. knowing that the cameras were on and putting on a show and putting on a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And is this real? Is it not? We're fucking with each other. We're trying to keep a straight face. We're trying not to laugh. Like, I love the idea of doing that, but really exotic locations. Space or underwater? Kevin, what do you pick?
Space.
Space, fuck yeah.
100%. Because underwater is just a small room, right?
Yeah, but I like the idea of looking out and seeing like an octopus or a squid or something. You know?
Nah, you're not going to see that. Water's too big. There's too much of it. You mean you look out there, you're gonna see blue. You get blue, and you're like, all right, cool.
It just feels like
space. There's no gravity. Game changer right there.
I was talking to my wife when I asked her that question. I was like, if we could afford it, because they're saying in our lifetimes, maybe not mine, but the rest of y'all's lifetimes, if you're wealthy, it's like privatized space travel might be a possibility for you. You might be able to go up there like a joyride. Lord knows for how much. But I was like, if we could afford it, would you do it? And Dee was like, absolutely, I would do it. I don't think I would. I think I'm too claustrophobic. I think it would cause me way too much anxiety to just get shot up in a rocket. And like, I don't think I went up in a hot air balloon one time, freaked out. I'm like, I think that's high enough. I don't think I want to do this.
In a lot of ways, it feels like, I'm assuming it would feel the way it would feel to do like cliff diving or jumping out of an airplane or something like that. Like, I feel like there's some sort of, it's the same sort of feeling of like, this could be the end right here. You know, like, who knows?
I mean, though, but that begs a good question, right? Say you're 75 years old, Andy, and you've done everything you wanted to do on Twitch, and they're fun. Like, Andy, you've accomplished it. They give you your gold Twitch play button or whatever they give you, and you get that many subscribers. And they go, this is it. Your life has been amazing. There's a 49% chance this rocket will explode, and your obituary will read, legendary Twitch streamer Nitro Rifle dies in space travel accident.
That's pretty cool.
That sounds badass. That's pretty dope. I don't know. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break to tell you about our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Canva. Design is such an integral part of making content, but dang, it's hard. Or it was hard until we started using Canva Pro. Now, I can design anything like a pro on any device. You can choose from thousands of customizable templates or start from scratch. It's something I love. I love the options there. Being able to go just look at a bunch of templates, it's helped with a lot of our pro imagery that we have to make, and it really kind of makes me feel like I know what I'm doing. It makes me feel like a genuine Andy Cortez. You love to see it. And Canva Pro has endless premium fonts, photos, videos, and so much more that add your own personal spice to whatever you're designing. You and four teammates can design together, unlock everything Canva Pro has to offer for just $12.99 a month. You can design like a pro with Canva Pro. Right now, you can get a free 45-day extended trial when you use our promo code. Just go to canva.me/KFGD to get your free 45-day extended trial. That's canva.me/KFGD. canva.me/KFGD to get your free 45-day extended trial. And next up, shout out to ButcherBox. Nothing beats quality meats. And with ButcherBox, you get more than just high quality meats. You also get holistically sourced meat, because ButcherBox always keeps the farmer, the planet, the animal, and your family in mind. Gia blew my mind recently when she made a grilled buffalo chicken sandwich. It was so good. I love ButcherBox. Every month, ButcherBox will ship a curated selection of high-quality meat right to your home. Each box contains between 8 to 14 pounds of meat, depending on your box type. It's a lot of meat. It's enough for 24 individual meals. The meat has no antibiotics or added hormones and is always packed fresh and shipped frozen for your convenience. Right now, ButcherBox is offering new members a 10 to 16-pound turkey free in the first box. Perfect timing for Thanksgiving. Just go to butcherbox.com/KFGD to sign up. That's butcherbox.com/KFGD to receive a free turkey in your first box. butcherbox.com/KFGD to get that free turkey.
Okay, now we're back from that.
Jeff, have you ever thought about doing a housewife style show, like committing a little bit more to the just cameras following people around, like legit it's reality TV for Achievement Hunter or Rooster Teeth or anything? Because like, I've put a lot of thought into it watching the shows of like, could it work? And I'm not sure that it could, but I want your insight.
I could it work? Yes. Would it work? I don't think so. I don't know that I would feel comfortable being as open and honest with the audience as the producers of Real Housewives are comfortable being. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of dirty laundry.
That's a thing, though, right? Is there they're creating characters, and that becomes their business. That becomes like I think that they're heightened versions of whoever. Like, I've watched enough episodes specifically of Beverly Hills to know that a lot of this stuff is produced. They're leaning into the drama. They're creating some artificial stuff. And I think a lot of the women that work on the show get that. And they understand that if they could become a exaggerated version of themselves and play into the drama, that they can make a pretty amazing career out of it and make a lot of money. But I don't know if you'd want that level of of, I don't want to say acting, but that level of animosity floating around the offices on a daily basis. Because people are basically, I mean, they're basically being rewarded for being as terrible as humanly possible toward each other and creating that drama, because it's fascinating.
And it's also, it's even if you're angry for effect, right? You're putting it on for the cameras because you're trying to produce a bit. And you're right. All those shows are producer led. All those segments and those situations, somebody's steering them in that. Whether their reactions are, I think, are mostly fairly realistic, but they're definitely being put into situations to enhance those moments. Well, you know what? I forgot what I was going to say. What were we talking about?
We were talking about, would you want to do that around the office?
Would it be viable?
Would you think that'd be a bad idea?
I find that what's happened to me, at least over the 20 years almost that I've been doing this, is that I get lost in those bits, and my comedy anger turns into real anger. And I think it would be too detrimental to relationships and friendships. I was mad at Gavin and Andrew. I don't know if you guys know Andrew, but he is somebody we do a podcast with. I was mad at them for 2 weeks. I wouldn't speak to him because of a bit on the podcast. And so,
like a joke that we all
created together. A joke that turned into a real anger. And
he did stand up with us at one time, right?
Yeah, he did. He did. That's a guy who did stand up with us. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Lovely gentleman.
I feel that as a person who has probably had one of the most, well, I'll say I've had some negative reactions to bits that we've done here too, and kind of gotten letting myself get out of control there. I could totally understand how that would be. That's not a situation that I'd want to put myself in, where I've been encouraged to dig into that darker side of myself, the insecurities, and just be like, I'm gonna go full ham and tell people what I really think about something, which is I just don't think it's. That's not something that a place I'd want to put myself or my coworkers around me in, for sure. Having said that, if it happens on a super yacht, Andy, let's go.
Submarine.
Let's Man, go. You what know, is with you and submarines?
Is that cool?
I want to say like 8 or 9 years ago, we just got a cold email from a production company that pitched Below Deck to us. And we're like, if you're interested in being cast on it. And we were like, what is this dumb shit? And we ignored it. And then it turned out to be Below Deck. I mean, we potentially could have been on that show years and years and years ago, I guess, when they were launching it.
Fascinating.
Wasted opportunities. Don't throw those emails away, people. You never know.
Is Below Deck, is that similar to when they're like catching fish on the...
No.
Below Deck is, it follows the real life misadventures of the crew of a super yacht, or a luxury yacht, not a super yacht, a luxury yacht, as the luxury yacht takes socialites around on 3 to 5 day vacations. And they have to cater to these very wealthy, ridiculous people. And then they have trials and tribulations, loves and fights. And
they all have sex with each other.
They all have sex with each other. They all hate each other. And every time, no matter what, the cook is a goddamn lunatic.
Yeah, always.
I know a lot about this show, actually, because I used to listen to, I used to only because it was canceled recently, but the Katie Nolan podcast, Sports. Katie Nolan and her crew would do a rundown of Below Deck all the time, and the audience fucking hated it. And I kind of like, whatever, like, I'll just listen to it, sure. So I knew about 10 minutes worth of the drama of, oh, yeah, wait. That fucking chef sucks, and those two people are great, and I hope they succeed. Like, I kind of like knew the inner workings of Below Deck, but yeah, this whole time for some reason I thought it was the fishing one where they're catching fucking shrimp and stuff.
No, that was that's Deadliest Catch.
Deadliest Catch.
No, these are totally polar. I totally understand from the words. Exactly. Yeah. No, Below Deck is definitely something, Tim. I think you and Gio would love this show.
Oh yeah.
But it's one of those situations where like. And Jeff is spot on with the chef, but they do a good job of producing the show so that when every meal comes out, you're like, what are they going to say? Are they going to like it? Mm-hmm. Are they going to like it? Mm-hmm. And the tension's there. And then we go to the commercial break, Tim. We come back, and the lead, as they call him, the lead or the primary, as they call him, is like, I got to be honest with you. The shellfish is excellent. And it's like, oh my God, he did it. He crushed it. You know what I mean? It's similar to what I would call the highest accolade in all reality television, the Paul Hollywood handshake.
Oh, that's correct.
And it came out of nowhere, by the way. It's already happened twice in this season, this newest season. And I'm like, he's giving these things away now.
It's been devalued over the last several years, Nick. It has been severely devalued. Yeah,
there was one season I remember watching where it didn't happen at all. Like, yeah. That doesn't surprise me. None of you are up to the task.
It's like Halley's Comet, you know?
It's exactly there should, it comes well, around once a year.
There should be seasons where nobody gets a handshake. It should be rarefied air, and it should only happen when I feel like there's a handshake quota these days. I really do.
You think so? You think the producers are like, yeah, you have to give at least three handshakes or else we're paying you your bloated salary, Paul Hollywood?
Or he gets so much good press from it that he's a little fast and loose with it himself. Like maybe his standards have dropped a little bit.
He's getting too big for his britches.
It's a feel-good story. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, although conversely, it could just be that through the course of the show and its rise in popularity and one would think that it's encouraged, bakers to become better. And
that's
maybe
fair.
He's just after this many years getting better.
Are they of rising? People. The rising to the challenge.
I don't know what that.
The rise and fall.
There. The proof is in the pudding. It's a lot of
proving.
Exactly. And then, man, when they pop out that proving drawer every time, I'm like, "Where's it come from? It's a secret drawer. This is crazy." Man, I love that show.
Tim, you're a well-professed member of Bachelor Nation, right?
Oh yes,
Christ!
What did you think of this season of Bachelor in Paradise?
Oh my God! Well, first off, Joey Noel's coming over tonight to watch the premiere of Bachelorette, so I'm not fully caught up yet on that. But Paradise, I'm going to say something controversial. I think this is the actual best season of Paradise that we've ever had. Having said that, it's the most busted ass season we've ever had. It is literally the leftovers of like, who even are most of you people? But they put them together. And for some reason, that created just the right amount of chaos that like, there was so much quality drama every damn episode. Like the fact that the Demi saga was over in the first like two episodes was shocking, and then it just kept going. Like I was entertained the entire way through. Normally with Paradise, it hits the point they all couple up, and then the last four episodes suck because you're just like, I don't want to actually see you guys in love. Like this is weird and it's starting to feel fake. Like the Bachelor and Bachelorette, I understand people can be like, how do you fall in love this soon? It's like, yeah, but like the setup kind of makes a lot more sense. There's more dating and stuff. Paradise is weird because you get to the final moments and there's someone that just came on that they're literally like, all right, I guess I'm with you. And it's like, I don't care about the love. But it wasn't about the love this season.
I am playing the part of the Kind of Funny podcast listener who doesn't know what y'all are talking about. But also, I don't know what y'all are talking about. Which one of these shows is the MCU phase movie, and which one of these shows is the TV show that may not be required viewing?
So it doesn't quite work like that. It's more Bachelor and Bachelorette are
like a side project or something.
No. They're Iron Man and Captain America, and then Paradise is Avengers. So it's like Bachelor has the 30 women, Bachelorette has the 30 men. Only one of them win on each side, and that leaves you 29 on each side that like people kind of either love or hate. There's the villains,
to the
there's
death.
The whatever, and then they take all of those and put them on an island together for Paradise, and they all couple up. And that's the gold.
It's basically their version of Temptation Island, Love Island, F-Boy Island, any kind of island. Mm-hmm. I find it to be more entertaining than the Bachelor and the Bachelorette.
Undeniable. Or at least you get through Bachelor and Bachelorette to earn Paradise.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to put the leftovers in American Ninja Warrior. I'm saying it right now. We got to do something else with these people.
No, see, that's the problem. You think that. You don't want that. They've done that. It was the Bachelor Winter Games, and it was atrocious.
Oh, really? Damn.
Yeah.
Do y'all care about Road Rules in Real World?
Yeah, I used to love those shows.
Back but like
I,
now?
I was actually, I was a Real World fan. Rules was always weird to me. I was like, wait, there's another show? I don't need it. I'm always a Real World guy. But then when they did the challenges, that's what you're talking about here, Andy.
Yeah, the challenges, like massive.
Real Rules challenges. And I'll never forget when I was younger watching that. I was like, this is brilliant because I'm getting invested in these other people. And it actually ended up with me watching. I think I watched like one series of World Rules. I was like, nah, still not for me. I'm a Real World person. But yeah.
I don't know.
Still going. Mega popular.
Are they still?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The challenge is now its own brand. Like it's
huge.
Yeah.
Wait, it's like it is cemented as its own thing that is, I would say, bigger than the other two for sure.
Easily. Wow. I mean, the other two don't even really exist. Like Real World is like kind of doing its weird little thing. Road Rules has been gone forever.
It's
and the challenge is up there with Survivor as like one of the biggest game reality shows.
It services to feed other shows like X on the Beach and like there's a ton of places.
Are
where
you the one?
Goes. Yeah, Are You the One? Yeah, it just spreads out.
Andy, when Jeff was like, I don't watch any other form of content other than reality shows, I was like, he's clearly kidding, right? It sounds like he only ever watches reality shows now. That's pretty crazy that you watch all these.
For instance, y'all probably watched Black Widow WandaVision.
Saw that.
Falcon in the I haven't seen a video or a superhero based thing since that last Avengers movie.
Now, are you playing a lot of games?
No. I watch a lot of sports and a lot of reality TV. I just like the real world right now.
How are them Celtics looking?
Well, tonight's our first night, so go green. We'll see. We'll see. Cautiously optimistic.
I'm not optimistic.
I know we're talking
a lot
about this reality stuff, so the last question before we can move on. I'm sorry, audience. I get it. Jeff, I've only seen Beverly Hills. What are the required viewings for Housewives?
Okay. So I'm not much further than you. I have such a limited amount of bandwidth to watch all this trash, right? So I'm hardcore in Beverly Hills. I would say I have dipped my toe in New York, Atlanta, and Potomac. I haven't latched onto any of those, but I would say Salt Lake City is phenomenal, and you should start from the beginning. They're only on the second season right now.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what we're going to do.
And because there's a woman on that show named Jen Shaw, she is going through in season two in real time a very similar thing to what Erica Jane's going through. And it's FBI is involved. It's just as sketchy. It's just as potentially damning for them. And so it's really fast. If you're into the Erica Jane stuff, you got to watch Salt Lake City because the Jen Shaw stuff is about to break and it's going to be huge.
Joey Noel joining the podcast. Joey, what are your thoughts on Erica Jane?
I know exactly what Joey's about to say.
If you guys don't fucking watch New Jersey, I'm going to be so pissed. New Jersey is so good. I'm rewatching New Jersey right now because I have missed maybe the last four seasons. So I went back because I haven't watched original stuff forever. And the first two seasons of New Jersey are so batshit crazy, man.
Someone get indicted on that show, too?
Yeah, that's Joe and Teresa.
Yeah, that's right.
He went to prison for tax stuff.
There's always someone getting indicted, which is like, I wonder if the producers are like, yes, we cast perfectly, right?
I bet you it's a nice prison.
Oh, it's definitely a prison at the end of Wolf of Wall Street where he's like, oh, I forgot for 1 second that I was rich. And it's just him playing tennis. That's probably the prison they're going to. But I have to imagine as a producer of the live show, like Jeff, if you were doing Last Laugh and all of a sudden someone came in and they were like, Nick Scarpino, you're under arrest for being too funny. And I'm like, what do you want from me, man? I was going to win this show.
They're like, wrongful conviction.
They're like, oh, I'm sorry, we got the wrong Nick Scarpino. We thought it was the guy from Portillo's. That's got to be a godsend for producers, but also like terrible. Wait, I'm surprised you guys don't. No one's mentioned The Real Housewives of Orange County. Wasn't that the OG?
Yeah, I don't think it's that great, to be honest.
Really? I liked New York when Dee was watching it just because of the Bethany Frankel conundrum. Mm. Like everything she did.
She shows up in Beverly Hills a lot.
Does she show up in Beverly Hills? Okay. Well, I like Beverly Hills got her. They got Denise Richards also. And then who was the other
new addition? R.I.P., man.
R.I.P., Denise is gone.
She's coming back, though.
Her and Lisa, she played, dude. Played.
She died. She died. He was like, R.I.P. I was like, oh, she died. I didn't know that. Just kids.
She'll be back the season after, I think.
You think so?
I think so. I think they're setting it up. They bring it up too much. They've brought it up too much at the end of the season. They're definitely teasing it, I think.
Well, who's the other person they just added? Is it
Sutton or Crystal?
Sutton and Garcelle and Crystal are the new people.
Who's the Spider-Man Homecoming? She's the mom. Yeah. Michael Keaton's wife.
Jeff, I'm sure you were a massive fan of Michael Jordan's 10-part series.
The Last Dance?
The Last Dance.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I want to do a 10-part series, and in the final episode, me and Greg Miller finally foot race. But it's essentially just kind of us documenting all of the back and forth, all of the bickering, all of the fighting and arguing that we've had over who is the fastest person, me or Greg Miller. I think that's perfect drama. I think we can really up the stakes. And I'm giving you, I don't know, how does a $2,000 budget sound? How about that?
And all I have to produce is 10 full-length, I'm assuming hour-long,
hour 30 each. Yeah.
Well, I'll take it back. I'll take it back to the fellows at Rooster Teeth, and we'll see.
All right.
Ideally, awesome. You'd also get the interviews they got. Like, so we're gonna need like Bryant Gumbel and and Michael Jordan. It'd be awesome if Michael Jordan could be a part of this as well.
Nice. 3,000. I'll raise the budget.
Real talk. How much money do you think we'd have to do to put toward a series, a reality series, where we reintroduce Greg to the Rooster Teeth audience so that they like him? How much money do that would cost?
It's like a big project.
That would really help our business out a lot if the Achievement Hunter and Rooster Teeth audiences, respectively, actually liked Greg.
It's like a big like makeover rehab project.
You know, it's so funny you say that because Jeff earlier said, like, you're surprised I still watch stuff. I rarely do, but for some of the higher profile stuff, I get invested. Like, and Gia and I really were into Last Laugh last season and this season. So we kind of made it like a thing where every week a new episode would come up and you watch it. I downloaded the RT app on my Apple TV for the first time this season to watch it. And every time I pull it up, the first things I see are our dumbass shows. So I'll see Andy's stupid ass face or like Greg's shit because we're on West Coast. So a lot of our stuff goes up late. So it's just the latest thing on the blade. And I'm like, so you're telling me that we are this prominently featured on Rooster Teeth and nobody still gives a fuck?
Yeah. somehow that happens and the Rooster Teeth audience goes over and goes, we have to convince people to unsubscribe from this YouTube channel. This is a travesty. This is anti-content is what these people are making.
Look, you know how Facebook is renaming itself? I think we need to go and undergo a name change and just kind of try to fool the audiences. We're brand new, a bunch of up and comers, all of us. You know, we're all kind of getting into the content creating. Yeah, exactly.
Quad team force. Yeah. Four bros.
Nick doesn't even know what joke you're making, Tim, because that's how out of it Nick is.
Yeah, I don't understand. Do you want to explain that to me?
It's a new Rooster Teeth group.
It's a Rooster Teeth group.
That's what live actions do. The old.
Right. That's where you guys have stuffed Blaine over there.
Yeah.
Stuffed Blaine.
Took that mountain of a man and stuffed him over there.
Nick, you need to watch Last Laugh. Like, if anything, and you should watch the whole season. Everyone should go check it out. It's great stuff. But you have to watch it just for the final episode.
I would love to watch it.
At least plays a bit that it might be one of the funniest things I've ever seen any of my friends do. It is.
I would say
so
watch season two because I think season two is way, 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 way better than season one. Yeah.
Okay. I agree. I will definitely do that. I was going to watch it this week, but then I saw that Jeff was coming on the podcast and I didn't want to disappoint him because he knows that I like to be completely unprepared for our interviews.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. I like to go in blind. What was it? Bro team four.
You nailed it.
Yeah.
Speaking of being unprepared, I was thinking about this the other day and this is a perfect opportunity. Can I take a second to tell you something about you, Nick? That
absolutely.
I appreciate.
I'm sure.
Take
an hour.
I had this realization a couple weeks ago and then I thought, I should tell this to Nick. And then I forgot about it. And then now here we are. So I realized I can say it. You have you single-handedly, maybe next to Bernie, who helped
start my
career, completely unintentionally, you have single-handedly altered the way I create content more than just about anybody else. And I'll tell you how.
Okay.
Well, first off, there's no secret that I have such an affinity for all of you. I love you guys so much. And I had so much fun that period of time where I felt like I was going up to San Francisco all the time and spending time with you guys. And the reason I was doing that was because I was so fascinated by your process and the way you were approaching getting on at the Punchline that we decided to make the documentary about it. And then the way to make the documentary make sense to Ruthie's audience, you know, we threaded me in and you kind of teaching me stand-up, which wasn't something I had ever planned on doing and not something that I'll probably continue in my career. But what I realized in the process of attempting stand-up and doing it the 10 or so times that I did it is that I started to prepare in a way that I never had as a content creator before. I'm very off the cuff. I have loose ideas in my head. I would go in, I would never write anything down. So I would go into a podcast or whatever with a loose framework of a joke I wanted to tell or a story I wanted to tell. But I discovered that I enjoyed the process of practice and of preparation so much that even though I don't do stand-up anymore, I apply that to everything I do. And what I do isn't much these days. I only do two podcasts, and the main podcast that I do is called Fuckface, and then I'm like a color man on one called Annual Pass. But I approach it completely unintentionally. It just changed the way, it informed the way I prepare now. I approach the Fuckface podcast each week much like a stand-up set. And in terms of like writing down almost everything I talk about, writing down stories, I actually, like, for instance, I had a story I told. It was a pretty long story, about 45-minute story about a misadventure I had in Mexico recently. I guess I did take a vacation to Mexico, so I did leave Austin for that, where I tried to go whale shark watching and everything went wrong. And I told the story, I think 25 times to myself, 45-minute story before I told it on air. And I would never have approached and it was, it did really well because I felt so prepared and because I had it down. And I think it's made me a much better entertainer because of that change, that evolution, which I never probably would have discovered had I not gone down that road with you and had I not had to start preparing comedy to be ready for stand up.
What a great time that was.
Super
fun. It was awesome.
That was super fun.
So I just want to say thanks because I think I'm a better entertainer than I was before. It's arbitrary whether I'm good or not, but I think I'm better than I was. And I don't think I would be as good as I was today if I hadn't gone through that experience with you.
Well, I really appreciate that. And I will just say this. You could do what a lot of comics do, which is try out material on your podcast. And when it works, you then take that to the stage. Cause that's what 99% of the comedy podcasts I listen to. I'm like, wait a minute. Like, I'll watch someone special. I'll be like, wait a minute. I heard him say that on the podcast three times already. What are we going to do there? I think back, I mean, obviously for a myriad of reasons, that time was awesome, not the least of which was that we could actually fly back and forth and see each other a lot. But I do feel like that was a special time in kind of Funny's like lifespan where we were just collaborating so much with you guys and felt like, and it's not to say we don't still feel close. It's just, you know, as things have progressed and companies kind of like, you know, new shows come up, new shows get canceled, or old shows get canceled. I don't feel like I see you guys ever. I think the only point of contact really is kind of Tim. He does a great job, but don't get me wrong. But that was like the spring breaks, the flying back and forth once or twice or three times a year to Austin just to kind of hang and do some of your shows and stuff like that. I hope we can get back to that. I really do. Because that to me went from this being a job to this being like, oh my God, I've always, you know, all kidding aside, felt super lucky to be able to do this as a living. But that was those times that I'm like, this feels really special that we get to actually all hang out and make cool shit together. And we don't have to worry necessarily about like where our next meal is coming from or where the next paycheck is coming from. That was a pretty special time for us as well. But I do want to say one note before we move on, because I want to talk to you about your podcast as well, about preparing for podcasts ahead of time. Make sure you're listening, Andy. Just make sure you're listening.
Okay.
Andy wasn't on the podcast last week, so I got to throw some shade at him.
This motherfucker did not listen to my joke because he was looking at a missed call.
Fair enough. I'm pretty sure it was a robocall too, because it's like, hey, if you'd like to redo your car warranty. I was like, I don't know about that.
No, it's always fake. I didn't want to talk about Jeff's podcast too, Nick. I'm glad you wanted to do that because Jeff has to leave pretty soon. I'm used to, as a Rooster Teeth fan, like just being used to the video component and growing up and watching a lot of Rooster Teeth videos and YouTube and Rooster Teeth and YouTube. Like, I'm just so used to seeing that. So this is in no way an offense to you, because I listen to one podcast and one podcast only. That's the Dan Lebatard Show with Stu Gatz.
Yeah.
And that's all I listen to. So I don't really have a whole lot of time to venture out to other podcasts. And it's a bit easy for me to kind of forget that Jeff is regularly working on stuff, because I rarely go and explore podcasts, you know, but I'll see stuff from Andrew on Twitter regarding Fuckface and I'll go, damn, I need to give that a shot. And I just never fucking do because my memory is terrible. What is Fuckface?
That's a great question. Sawu asked the exact same question over on Patreon. So with Jeff being part of the Fuckface podcast, I want to hear from the crew what have been some times that you guys have fucked faced yourself. If you don't have context for that, ask Jeff for an explanation on what a fuckface moment is if you're confused. Can you explain to the people out there, the kids out there, what is this podcast all about?
And how do you sell ads on it?
Well, it's, you know, that's it all rolls into what the podcast is, right? So I wanted to initially make a podcast about Andrew, our Canadian friend, because he's just a fucking weirdo and he's unlike any other human I've ever spoken to. And he and Gavin and I have this really weird friendship. And I wanted to just call it Andrew, and each week it would be a deep dive into what's going on in his mind. And as we started to plan that out, and it kind of naturally evolved into what became the Fuckface podcast. And I guess that the etymology behind that is, I'm sure you all remember in the 80s, I believe it was 1989, on a Topps baseball card, Billy Ripken, the younger brother of Cal Ripken, world famous baseball player, he had a baseball bat that had Fuckface written on it, and they printed it. And it was became, when I was a kid, it was the most sought after baseball card in the world. It was called the Fuckface card. And then they caught it immediately or pretty quickly, and they whited it out. And then so most of them don't have Fuckface on them, but some of them do. Andrew and I were talking about that baseball card. We decided to buy boxes and try to collect that card. And in that process, it kind of got us thinking about sports and collecting and working on a podcast together. And then I was reading about the history of that Fuckface baseball card and how it happened. And the story Bill Ripken always told was that he just picked up a bat and took the photo, and that somebody had pranked him. What he admitted like 30 years later is he wrote it on the bat himself because he thought it was funny. And then he didn't think about it when he picked up the bat. And so what he essentially did was fuck-faced himself, right?
Oh, wow. Kevin's got the picture.
And that,
right,
in that moment, it kind of became a phrase to crystallize kind of how I have lived most of my life, which is shooting yourself in the foot for a laugh, doing something that's going to make you laugh, but you know the ramifications are going to be far worse than the joy you derive from the funny moment, but you have to do it anyway because you have an unhealthy relationship with comedy, right? And so we started to refer to that as fuck-facing. So you like, you do something incredibly stupid, like name a podcast Fuckface, and then try to sell it to advertisers. Shot myself in the foot with the name.
Hilarious.
And so that's the I guess the thesis of the podcast is it's basically just like a general what's going on in our lives comedy podcast where we prank each other, we dare each other, we fight, we place bets, and we talk a lot about sports. And fruit. We're on a big fruit kick. Do you guys know they're still inventing fruit? Do you guys know that there's a new apple dropping November 8th called the Cosmic Crisp? I'm not aware of the Cosmic Crisp apple. It didn't fucking exist. There's a new apple in 2021 dropping on the market. Stuff like that. That's
I can't wait for you to come on to our definitive Apple podcast because we had one last year.
Did you?
And we love talking about the different variants of apples, and berries and all sorts of vegetables and things like that.
We talked today. We're gonna institute an official apple ranking system. So maybe I'll incorporate you guys into this.
I feel like we'd really like to be a part of that.
Apple dome.
Yeah, absolutely.
The golden one did really well on ours.
I will say that Fuji is climbing up the ranks. I will say Fuji is climbing up the ranks for longevity. Holy shit. I had an apple on this chair sitting next to me in one of those little bags that you get at the grocery thing. That fucking apple has been sitting here for, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks by now. I was like, fuck, I forgot this apple. It's going to be all shitty. It was not. It was perfect, dude. I ate it this morning.
Allow good for your insides. To blow your mind, Andy. Okay. Let me tell you about a little thing called the Cosmic Crisp. And I'm not paid by the Washington Apple Commission, which is a thing, by the way, I've discovered. I'm just an enthusiast. I'm just excited. I haven't had a Cosmic Crisp apple yet. I'm waiting for them to drop November 8th. But this apple purportedly lasts up to a year.
What the fuck?
Wow. The technology. Yeah.
That can't be healthy.
Supposedly 1 year is what they say. Here, I'm going to put it in your general. Boom. That's their website. Anyway,
that cannot be healthy. Yeah, we got to have like Morgan Spurling do another supersize me doc or something like that. That's crazy.
So that's Fuckface. It's just like doing dumb shit that you have to pay for later. That's not worth the joke in the moment.
That sounds like my entire existence.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds like I do that to myself a lot more than I even know I do that to myself. But that's why I have Tim here, ladies and gentlemen, because he recognizes all those moments. And sometimes he'll slack me and be like, Nick, that was genius. You're funny. Keep going.
That's what I say every single time.
Jeff, how much longer do we have before? Do you have to take off?
I probably got to go. Yeah.
Okay. Not
I just want to let you know, the last thing I want to say to you there is the other podcast, Annual Pass, you are living my dream life of being able to just go around to a bunch of amusement parks and talk about them. That is very cool. I'm very envious of you and Jack. Congratulations. You did it.
Thanks, please, man. Please invite Tim.
You can ride on all the jostly ones, because I have almost thrown up on quite a few now. I'm learning. I'm learning that in my old age, I'm not a roller coaster guy anymore.
It's really late to find out.
Yeah. What a great show for you to be on.
I used to be. The body changes over time, apparently, unfortunately.
It does. Unfortunately, it gets more frail. At least that's the case in my case. Jeff, it's been awesome having you back on the show. Hopefully, we won't wait another 2 years to have you back on. In fact, you know, you have a standing invite to be on any of our content. We love you very much. Great catching up.
I love you guys, too.
Enjoy the Celtics game tonight. Hopefully they win their first one.
And the reunion.
And Survivors tonight, too.
Big night.
The biggest of them all. Big night. Yeah.
Of course, ladies and gentlemen. That has been your podcast for this week, This Kind of Funny Podcast. If you're a Patreon supporter, you're going to go into our post show right now. But if you don't, hey, make sure you follow Jeff on all social media platforms and make sure you watch all of these amazing. No, he's not on it anymore.
You don't have to do that. That's fine.
Make sure you watch all these amazing Housewives shows as well, so that you, if you ever meet Jeff in public, can just talk to him a lot about Bethany Frankel. Don't do that. Or go
follow Fuckface on Spotify and iTunes and all that.
That's a much better thing to tell people to do. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen.
Good luck finding it. It's impossible to search for.
God bless you, Jeff.
It's got a bunch of asterisks.
Yeah.
Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, it's been our pleasure to serve you.